You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Myopia, guys. It's a casual summer introduction. Casual summer hello. I'm wearing my Birkenstocks and drinking a cold one.
And he's wearing nothing else.
Nothing else. Nothing. It really does cool off a hot mic.
At least put a towel on. Come on.
My little biscuit's learning to swim, and we are catching up on a pretty cool movie. So this one was my pick. Of course, we're doing it. You're listening to it, so you know it's Mission Impossible 1994?
96, I think.
96, thank you.
I remember when this was released and seeing it in theaters back in the day. So.
And me too.
Yeah, this is one I did. So on panel, you can already hear this is Daniel and this is Matt.
Yep.
Hello.
We are now getting to the end of the summer. In fact, this is the second to last summer episode. We have one icy cold one next week. but for now, we're going to talk about Tom Cruise.
Do you remember back when he wasn't becoming an old man?
He's tried his best to look and act the same for the last 30 years.
I saw the trailer for the most recent Mission Impossible movie. It's like, does Ethan Hunt get AARP newsletters now?
Mm. My favorite was year before last, that horrible Mummy movie.
Oh, yeah.
Where he's supposed to be the young action hero guy. Mm-hmm. Playing opposite Russell Crowe, who's the kind of wizened old, like Van Helsing type.
Yeah, but isn't Russell Crowe like 3 years younger?
Russell Crowe, though, like a good European slash, I know he's an Aussie, but
yeah.
He just gets fat with age and he's fine with it, you know?
Good for him.
Strange Scientology rituals involving alien blood keep Tom Cruise young.
And filled with methamphetamines to just hop around on couches.
Which is also a nostalgic reference at this point. That was 12 years ago, people.
Oprah or Ellen's couch?
Oprah.
So, Mission Impossible. Have you guys revisited this one since we did it, 4 years ago?
No.
No, I haven't.
I know I'm the minority on this, but I still think the second one that John Woo directed is still a better summer blockbuster Mission Impossible movie because it's so overdone. The plot is so stupid, but at the same time, because it's John Woo, it's so well executed that, you know, everybody's in the theater is just sitting there drooling on themselves watching it.
Well, this is interesting because Mission Impossible is kind of weird, right? It's led by Tom Cruise. So he picks the directors, he mm-hmm. produces them all, he stars in them all, and he essentially has to insure them because as a 75-year-old man, no one wants to insure a man who's trying to climb the Burj Khalifa or strap himself to an airplane.
I do admire the fact that Tom Cruise does his own stunts. That's very impressive. I wish more people did that. I kind of wish Tyler Perry every once in a while would jump out of an airplane and not just on film.
Madea
but anyway.
Joins the special forces.
Weird. But anyway.
Delta Farce with Madea.
Oh, no.
That might be the most racist film of the last century.
I don't know.
It was a movie.
Delta Farce. It's Larry the Cable Guy who's supposed to be in the special forces.
Cool, y'all. I joined the army. Hey, cool. Hey, cool.
But his plane gets shot down in Mexico. He has plane trouble. He crashes in Mexico, and he thinks it's the Middle East and just starts calling everyone towels heads and starts shooting Mexicans.
Cool, y'all. I'm killing people with a different skin color than me.
Yeah, no. It's right up there with Roseanne at being racist.
Oh,
yeah. But what were you saying? Oh, so this is an interesting franchise because this one's De Palma. The mm-hmm. second one is John Woo. And John Woo, the only problem I generally have with him is his movies go on about half an hour too long. Honestly.
His Hong Kong stuff is great. Before he came to Hollywood, he was great.
Agreed. And even Hard Target is 90 minutes. So I don't know what happened. the third one is J.J. Abrams.
Yeah.
The fourth one, I think, is Brad Bird.
Yep.
The fifth one is, that's where I drop off. It's cool
maybe
that
that's when the movies drop off.
No, I think the fifth one's great actually. That's Ghost Protocol.
I don't know if I've seen any past two.
The fifth one is Ghost Protocol, then Rogue Nation. Fifth and sixth one are excellent.
Oh, all right.
And the fifth one is IMDb is being slow and it's loading everything. Why are there so many videos on this page?
Because it's Tom Cruise.
Yeah, right. But it's... I kind of like this. Oh, the fifth one is Brad Bird. No, the fourth one is Brad Bird. I was right. I'm an idiot. You're fine.
Did they get Brad Bird back?
No.
Well, I mean, anyway, this movie, I seem to recall... In retrospect, it's just kind of weird because the plot's more of a classic noir plot.
Yeah.
Whole lot of twists, whole lot of turns, whole lot of betrayals, and Emilio Estevez getting stabbed in the eye.
Yeah.
Is he the one who was in the elevator?
Yep.
When Estevez had a career. It was the last two were directed by Christopher McQuarrie, the guy who did Usual Suspects and the guy who did Edge of Tomorrow.
Usual Sus... Oh.
He wrote the script. Okay. Sorry. And he directed Edge of Tomorrow. And he did The Mummy and Jack Reacher, too. So Tom Cruise just has
a man crush on this guy.
Or vice versa.
Ooh.
But he only directed Rogue Nation and The Way of the Gun. You want to talk about a piece of shit. But anyway, we have this kind of... I don't know. You're right, though. This is more like a winter spy movie. This is almost John le Carré. I like it, and it has a cool Nintendo 64 game.
Wait, it does?
It does.
I do not remember that.
I remember that.
Yeah, and you only play the first mission where you're in the embassy for the party, and you have to like drug a guy to use the mask making machine to make a mask of his face, to get a handoff, to get a thing, to get fingerprints, and it's awesome.
And if you get seen in any of the process, like wearing the mask, you do something you're not supposed to. The other one's like, the general has gone insane. They'll try to arrest you.
And you fail the mission. It's neat.
So it's like Metal Gear Solid, except...
Yeah, it's a lot like Metal Gear
Solid.
You've
got a screwdriver plunged into your head.
Kind of, sort of. Although, unfortunately, after the first level, it becomes very Metal Gear Solid because it's a third-person shooter. Mm. The first one is not a shooter.
Right. That was back in the day when you had those floppy diskettes in order to play a game.
Well, and frankly, an N64 cartridge didn't hold much more than a floppy disk.
I know.
And it was like 30 megs of memory. Ooh. Anyway.
Oh, that was top of the line back then, kids.
Yeah. If I recall correctly, too, this is one of the major episodes of Jeremy. Like, I think it was his idea for the episode. He loved this movie. So, fuck you, Daniel, I guess. Anyway.
I've been hearing that a lot lately.
Yeah. So, guys, enjoy your summer. Crack open a cold one. And next week, our last rerun before we hit August swimmingly. So, you know, keep listening. Keep giving us our good feedback. And enjoy the rest of your feedback. And enjoy the rest of your...
Hello, Questers. This is Mandy, the host of Caster Quest, inviting you to enjoy our podcast where we explore the rich and vibrant world of Patrick Rothfuss's best-selling fantasy series, The Kingkiller Chronicle, soon to be adapted as a major motion picture and television show produced by the award-winning creator of Hamilton, Lin-Manuel Miranda. Hungry for more content? Perhaps you will enjoy our recaps of HBO's Game of Thrones, Over the Garden Wall, animated Batman films, or our world-famous erotic fanfiction reads. Whatever you're in the mood for, if you love a good story, humor, impromptu parody songs, and thousands of pop culture references, you'll enjoy our show. You can find Caster Quest on SoundCloud, iTunes, and of course, our amazing network, the Earth Station One Network, at esopodcast.com.
And I'm Michael.
And we're Go Postal Podcast.
The podcast where we read your drunken ramblings, postcards, emails, whatever you can think of, really.
And how do you get these sent to us? You can send it to P.O. Box 198514 in Nashville, Tennessee, 37219, or gopostalpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook.
You can find us on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher. We release an episode every Monday. Auf Wiedersehen.
Ciao.
Welcome to My Epic Defender Childhood. This week we watched Mission Impossible, the best Emilio Estevez death since Mighty Ducks 3. I'm Nick Hoffman, editor of Dude Letter, and tonight we were defended by...
Jeremy.
And on panel tonight is...
Hello, this is Daniel.
Matt. You know, usually I point to you, but you're wearing Emilio Estevez's glasses, so...
I guess penetrate your eyes.
We're going to move on. And on tonight's panel is...
And back to Matt.
And...
Abby.
So tonight, we watch Mission Impossible. Jeremy, do you have any thoughts? Did this hold up as well as you'd hoped?
Yes and no. It held up in that I actually understood most of what was happening. I was 14 when I saw it, so a lot of it flew over my head. But it was bad in the sense that I didn't realize how douchey Tom Cruise was in this until now. Plus, as with all movies from the past, the technology is horribly laughable in how obsolete it is now. So I got a good laugh out of that.
That's awesome. Before we get any further, Daniel, would you like to give us a plot summary?
Well, I'll give it my all for a movie like this. Tom Cruise is Ethan Hunt, who is a member of an organization called IMF. They have been tasked with covering a non-official cover or knock list during an attempted theft on it. Their mission fails, Hunt's entire team gets killed, and he is somehow blamed for it. So he puts together another team of people who used to be associated with IMF but no longer are, and they try and discover what happened to the first team, who the mole in IMF is, and how they can protect the non-official cover list from being exposed to America's enemies. I think that's the plot.
That was succinct. I think that was good.
That actually worked out really well. Thanks to the Wikipedias, I know what IMF stands for, and it's not International Monetary Fund, which is what I thought. It's Impossible Missions Force.
Oh, come on.
Which immediately made me disgusted, because at one point, Tom Cruise refers to it as impossible, like as IM agents, and I was just like, Impossible Mission Agents? And I was like,
is that what they're called in the TV show?
I'm sure. Yeah, no. So there's so many places to start here. Jeremy, where do you want to start with this?
I guess I want to start by saying, I don't know. This was Emilio Estevez's best role since Men at Work. he does so much with so little.
Not that, Repo Man?
Come on. Rolling a bowling ball down a trash, you know, that's brilliant.
Eating from a can that's just labeled food. Yeah.
But no, I guess the one thing to point out is that of all the Mission Impossible movies so far, this is like the one with that has actual spying in it and things like that.
Well,
there is a gun fired literally once in this entire movie. Like, there is a whole action scene, probably the most famous action scene in the whole movie, that is completely silent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's... this movie couldn't be made today by Hollywood because it's very subtle. It's very twisty. You got to pay attention to this. You know,
how long ago did Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy come out?
3 years. That was a purely espionage movie, though. Like, I wouldn't say that was an action movie.
I was going to just say it couldn't be made today because Jean Reno can't fit in a helicopter.
I was going to say it couldn't be made today because John Voight can't do stuff anymore.
Yeah, that was the one thing that creeped me out the most about this is, like, he had to be in his 50s, but, of course, his hot French wife is probably in her 20s. And that's, I didn't realize that when I first saw that, but I was like, damn, that's gross.
That's pretty much the norm. They did a graph.
It was a very graph.
Yeah, yes. Very, very graph. But a lot of this movie is famous. The masks, your mission is, if you choose to accept it, the exploding tapes, the coming down from the ceiling, I could go on and on and on. I even had a birthday party with the invitations where the tapes with the, this will explode in 10 seconds.
Did they actually explode?
No one showed up to her birthday.
Because they were dead.
I have a question, though. What aged this movie the worst for you guys? Because for me, it was the idea that you could smoke on an airplane.
For me, it was the use of Usenet.
People still use Usenet.
No, they don't.
I'm on Easy News.
They were treating the internet like it was this magical, mystical device.
Hollywood still does that. I mean,
The email graphics.
I was going to say, I wish when I sent an email, a GIF would pop up that said from blank to blank, and the word went down a tube. But that's not a bad place to start. Do you think they hired Emilio Estevez because he's shorter than Tom Cruise?
Probably.
It was the only male actor they could find who was shorter than Tom Cruise. Because Bing Rames is not shorter than anyone.
No.
Okay, so we should start at the beginning because this movie
has a few famous set pieces. I think the first one works, and if you had an N64 and you're not like 21.
Are you saying I didn't play Mission Impossible for the N64?
The only level you played was the first level, because the first level is the greatest thing ever, and the rest of the game makes no sense.
I don't remember any of it.
So wait, it's officially like the movie then. The first half hour is the greatest thing ever, and the rest of it makes no sense? Oh, we're going there?
To be fair, I could get this movie when I was like, I don't know, when did I have that birthday party? 8? Like, I understood what was going on, but Madison was watching it with us, and she was just totally bored from the first 2 minutes on.
I will say that I wasn't bored. I was just scratching my head the entire time. Plus, considering the talent involved, it took me a while to realize that Brian De Palma was the one that directed it, and the guy that wrote Chinatown wrote it. It's like, really?
And by realizing, it turned out like this? I had to tell you Brian De Palma was the one.
No, I double-checked the Wikipedia. That's what I did.
See, like, to me, this is very Brian De Palma. And for those of you who are scratching your head and saying, when I was a kid, we didn't have Brian De Palma. Well,
yes, you did.
You did. You just didn't realize. Something I've learned doing this podcast is that directors actually matter. Because that's what happened to Star Wars: The New Hope, The Phantom Menace. It was definitely directed right the fuck up. But this movie is, for those of you who don't know, Brian De Palma directed things like Carlito's Way and the most overrated movie of all time, Scarface. And
oh, come on. No one actually thinks Scarface is good. It's enjoyable, but it's not actually good.
He directed the most 80s movie ever, and that was Body Double, and it's glorious.
He did. But this is an attempt to reboot a very old property. It was, I think, a 60s and 70s TV show.
Yep. Right, but that was part of the problem for me, if you don't mind my jumping in here. They, I had to look this up again with the Wikipedia, because that's how far the internet's advanced.
Uh-huh.
They kind of screwed up the original TV show, because one of the main characters is, a double agent in this one. Sorry, spoilers, everyone. I can't imagine fans of the TV show liking that.
If I may, though, it's a thing of the era, because GoldenEye, which I think came out in 96 as well, also has a double agent that's an insider, and it's all about, the Cold War's over. We need to find internal enemies. It's the same plot. It's just Brian De Palma versus James Bond. I don't know how I feel about this versus a Bond movie, because it's trying to make Tom Cruise the American James Bond. Yeah. And we have a Bond expert on here. This is why I'm poking the bear. No, I mean, it's the truth. Because the first Pierce movie comes out the same year.
Yep.
And Pierce Brosnan is right up there with Roger Moore as Bond wearing a suit and then just untussling his hair after he's killed 50 people.
Yes.
This is a Bond character who gets the ever-loving piss beat out of him and ends the movie on the front of a TGV train with Thing just inches from his... Which I pulled my wife over. I'm like, this is De Palma's idea of a joke as a guy faints off screen. Yeah. So what do you think of this? You.
Are you saying...
You there, boy!
versus a Bond movie in particular as far as the characterization goes, or... Well,
again, 1996, this is a spy movie.
Yes.
When they're rebooting Bond in the 90s, they're trying to redo the same idea. Does this fit as a spy movie in the same Bond vein?
I'd say stylistically somewhat. I mean, they're very... I still would not... If someone told me, this is a Bond movie now, I would have difficulties accepting it, because I just don't like Tom Cruise. I think his character is stupid.
Now, do you not like Tom Cruise or his character?
Well, I mean, both, but I just...
What else does Tom Cruise play? I think I...
Well, he was that dude that wouldn't come out of this closet in South Park.
I think I disliked Tom Cruise the least in this movie.
I was going to say, this is not the character he usually plays to me, because, he's angry, he's That's confused. True. Because usually he's the guy who's always smiling and,
he's just smug.
He's smug. This one, he's often frantic.
Yeah, I guess he's on his back foot a lot.
You know, I did like that about him. I mean, Ethan Hunt, instead of being an action hero, was a very scared individual who acted realistically like he was 1 second away from being captured and thrown into a very bad prison for the rest of his life.
And I guess the
thankfully he had gum.
thankfully he did have gum.
How many slices of that gum did he get?
I thought just the one.
Yeah, I thought just the one, but number two comes up at the end, so hey.
Also, as a side note, for those of you who have gum, it doesn't stick on its own.
No.
Nope. You need to
gotta wet it.
Yep. Yep. You gotta chew it.
He just throws it.
Even though Emilio Estevez says specifically, don't chew it.
Yeah.
Or
oh my God! If there was a blooper reel for someone chewing the gum, exploding, that would be the greatest thing ever.
I would love to think that it actually worked.
Yeah.
And there's a blooper.
How did that's like, such a missed opportunity to have a bad guy just chew the gum and blow the hell up?
That's the one I was gonna say the same thing. It's not a MacGuffin, but it's a plot device.
Yeah.
You know, this didn't remind me so much of a Bond film. It reminded me of, like, a Tom Clancy adaptation or, like, one of those Jack Ryan movies from the early 90s.
It reminds me of a Jack Ryan movie. It reminds me of a Bourne movie. It reminds me of the new Bond, like a Daniel Craig, because he's on his back foot the whole time, like you said.
Yeah.
But before we get too far, I wrote down Emilio Estevez's line, which is, hasta lasagna, don't get any on ya. Because Emilio... And then the director said, we need to kill him.
We were talking about which Mission Impossible we liked best. Is this the only Mission Impossible where he doesn't get the girl at the end? Because the girl just dicks him over.
Oh, yeah.
That and she dies.
Well, yes. Good.
I love it when
plot.
John Voight is the badass. It just doesn't work. It doesn't work. I also...
I was also so conflicted not liking Leon the Professional. I was like, what do I do with my emotions?
Like, you didn't like Leon the Professional?
No. Oh. I liked Leon the Professional. I didn't like whatever his French name is that Jean I'm going Jean. To.
Oh, yeah.
Come on, when Tom Cruise is the good guy, you got to make the Frenchie the bad guy.
Yeah. Also, you haven't seen the movie Godzilla recently, but 1998's Godzilla, he's also in it, and you won't like him there.
Jean Reno was in that?
Yes, he was.
Because the French Special Forces were the ones who apparently set off the bomb that created Godzilla.
Oh, of course. Good.
And so they're just wandering around New York, and he demands croissants, even though he demands croissants. No croissant. And just like, God,
you know, it's interesting that Brian De Palma directed this, and Jeremy brought up about the silent heisting. You've seen Rafifi, right?
Yeah.
With that 30-minute silent heist bit. So
yeah, De Palma is someone who would know that. Yeah. John Woo is not someone who would know that.
John Woo's...
John Woo would blow the bank up.
We're going to get into that now,
And then there would be doves flying around.
Yeah.
Because doves are filled with...
He would strap bombs to the doves, fly them into the building.
You do know that John Woo was the guy who produced that re-release of Le Cercle Rouge, right?
Yeah, that's Melville, not Dessin. So.
I know, but even so, it shows.
We're really talking about this now?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I zoned out.
This is the Criterion episode of the podcast.
Hey, Daniel did mention Body Double, which is coming out to Criterion. And
no, Dress to Kill is coming.
Dress to Kill. Yeah, Dress to Kill.
Well, and again, De Palma's made some classic movies, even though I think Scarface is overrated. I like Carlito's Way a lot.
The Untouchables.
The Untouchables is great. Which, again, not enough staircases in this movie. Although they do blow up a bar based around, apparently, an aquarium.
Yeah.
Apparently an aquarium.
Oh, God, that explosion. That guy flying, that didn't work. Yeah. What?
The physics needed some work there. But
he blew up the wrong direction and then still ended up out the window.
Yeah.
Is Tom Cruise one of these guys who does a lot of his own stunts?
Yeah, he is.
Is he?
Oh.
I think he does all of it.
Well, you saw
stuff.
The trailer for the most recent Mission Impossible that's coming out where he's on a plane. They actually hooked him up to a plane. That's real. Yeah,
Like, he actually did climb up a building for that shot. Mm-hmm. Like, he does that kind of thing. But, like, that scene, you can kind of tell because in that one scene, especially the one at the aquarium, he's literally just running down the road. And it's a very awkward shot. And you're just like, oh, this isn't dramatic. It's just a guy running down a road. But he does that. Yep. I want to see... Again, Criterion version of this where they do it behind the scenes on how they did that TGV thing. Mm-hmm. Because his face was rippling, so I don't know how much wind they were blowing at him out of a cannon. But, like, it's hard to fake that. Because it's a De Palma film, so it's all really tight Dutch angles of faces. It was the most dramatic cocktail scene ever where him and Kittredge?
Yeah, that is,
where, like, we think it's you as the mole. Pan into his face, and he's like,
whoa.
What? Pan into Tom Cruise's face. You're just like, now, my God.
Here's another thing about that. With all of Tom Cruise's flashbacks of the mission, it's like 12 o'clock, guy in bow tie staring at me. There was another team there. And then at the end, when he figures out somehow that John Voight was the mole, I mean, it looks great, but how does that actually work? How does he figure that out?
I think he's just running through it in his head where it is plausible where this guy could have done all of these things.
Well, and then as the director, we get a couple random shots of those Russians like 9 times where it just like shows that couple like embracing or just like... it's really creepy when two people are hugging and staring at you. I think I'd remember it, but the camera keeps reminding us that we'd remember it, which is weird.
Yeah. Hey, it's a Brian De Palma movie. People hugging is very tame by his standards.
That's true.
We needed split screens. That's what we needed for this to be a Brian De Palma movie, like full on.
Or you talked about John Woo, that Incredible Hulk by John Woo, where it's just
that was
like,
Ang Lee.
Ang Lee? Yeah. Oh, shit. That almost got racist.
Did you just say all Asians are the same? Come on, man. Good God.
Well, I mean, I guess my favorite Asian at this point is just Quentin Tarantino.
He's my favorite black dude, personally. He's my favorite black dude.
So I guess we have to talk about who the best programmer is in the Mission Impossible movies. Is it Emilio Estevez, Ving Rhames, or Simon Pegg? Who's the most believable nerd?
I really liked Ving Rhames. He was great.
That guy just screams nerdy programmer.
I also love that, like, again, you're talking about plot holes, but things that it's not even plot holes as much as things they don't bother to explain, like the idea that there's a guy in a fire truck with a laptop, of course, fine, whatever, he's programmed, but he's still bothered to put on the fire truck overalls and stuff. Like, he's still dressed like a fireman, as though if someone looked in, he was like, I'm checking my email. Like, what are you gonna say?
So long as we're talking about plot holes at this point, can I get to the thing that killed the movie for me?
Was it? Did your power go out?
No, that was a different week, which wasn't as fun. But anyway, the whole idea is that Ethan Hunt, I almost called him Tom Cruise because at this point he doesn't play characters; he plays variations of himself. Was trying to clear his name from being the double agent who was stealing the knock list from the CIA and selling it to America's enemies. Right. So in order to do that, he breaks into the CIA headquarters, steals the list, and sells it to America's enemies. How does that work?
Because he has to set the other person up.
Right, but what if he'd been caught beforehand? Then there's no chance.
If he
whatsoever.
Turns himself in, he goes to scary prison. If he gets caught, he goes to scary prison. If he manages to prove that the other person was trying to sell this knock list,
still
then he
broken into
go.
The CIA headquarters. Go. That's usually
but they were just
scary
looking for
prison.
The mole. They several times were like, "We taught him to do this. We should have known better."
I do like the idea, though, that it's in my mind, at least, maybe it's just the De Palma thing, but it's a very 80s move to just end the movie where the movie ends, because we don't get that moment where Kittredge looks at him and goes, well played. You know what I mean? Because, like, in real life, it'd be like, you still fucking broke into the CIA.
He gets a pass on that one. He's fine.
Exactly. Right, he's still broken into the CIA.
I'm not going to argue with you on that. But again, there's no scene where he's like, we're just going to watch you from now on. Mm-hmm. You know, it's because, I mean, that's the whole thrust of the Bourne movies, which is that we don't know what he knows. Mm-hmm. We just need to get him. And so he's constantly on the run, whether he Jeremy Renner or Matt Damon, who turned into Jeremy Renner or whatever. I agree with you. However, if that had to be explained, the best set piece in this movie goes away, which is them breaking into that white room, which is
I remember when that was quoted everywhere after that movie came out. Wasn't there some Leslie Nielsen movie that came out 2 years afterwards?
Spy Hard.
No, not that one. It was Wrongfully Accused.
Which is okay.
Hold on. Isn't the rest of the plot of the rest of the movies that they're basically like, well, you broke into the CIA, so you can't be an agent anymore. And then he tries to get away, and then he's, like, free climbing way too high. And then they're like, well, you're the only one that can do this impossible mission. And that's how he gets to do the rest of the movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is explained. Yeah.
And at the end of this movie, it's a parallel scene, which you always love because, you know, it's setting up for you're not going to believe this. Would you like the films of the Caribbean?
As opposed to what was it originally? The films of the Ukraine?
The Ukraine in the beginning, yeah. Mm.
Which is awesome. I like the idea that this woman is, of course, a CIA agent, and she just walks around just dealing with first-class passengers.
I just love somebody, like, dinging a CIA agent. I need another glass of wine over here, damn it!
So,
it's like, I'm not getting paid enough for this shit.
Yeah. A little inside baseball here. As my guests are arriving for the podcast, we often have crap on the TV, and we're watching an episode The Simpsons would have to pull up. We're watching an episode called The Trouble with Trillions, in which it literally starts where Homer commits tax fraud and so ends up in a photo booth with a guy who whispers the password. You know, it's a parody of this exact scene, and he just says the password is the word cheese in a photo booth. And so you realize if someone just asks for a film that the stewardess could give the wrong tape.
You never know. There could be somebody.
There's no explanation to any of this.
There could be somebody who's a huge Ukrainian cinema fan on the plane. You never know.
It's better than Serbian film, which just should never be watched ever. Thanks, YouTubes.
Yeah. All right. So we should talk about this set piece. The first set piece is very, at least in my mind, a very Bond scene. You know, they're at they're at a fancy cocktail party. There's a mark they have to get to. The second set piece scene is where they're breaking into Langley.
Wait, aren't those the second and the third? Because the first one's the mask scene, the mask set, where they convince someone that he's killed a hooker or whatever.
Oh, you're right. I was talking to you. You're right. That's the pre-credit sequence. Yeah. And that's right. And that's awesome. That's a great. That's a good in, actually. I think. Then you have this is like a six act structure, which is unusual. The second act is the one I'm thinking of, where they're trying to break into Langley. They never say CIA. They say Langley, and they say IMF, which is not International Monetary Fund. I looked twice. I kept getting confused. I'm easily distracted by Yingling. Sponsor us, Yingling. Also, but they're trying to break into a white room. I like this because it reminds me a lot of a movie that comes out 3 years later, or 6 years later, which is Ocean's 11.
Yeah.
He explains the plot briefly, but we don't get the whole explanation. And then we get an awesome scene in which Jean Reno kills a rat. Somehow there's a knife.
Yeah, they never really explain that. It's just the rat's there 1 second, and the next it's on its side.
I don't think that has to be explained. I mean, I think that dude could kill a rat. I thought for some reason I remembered the rat having the giant knife.
I remember it bleeding. Yeah.
So Matt's comment during the scene was, "Computers are hot. This is bullshit."
I will say this about those about the set pieces. That opening scene at the cocktail party was great. It was a well done spy scene, and so from a stylistic standpoint, was that break in. I mean, if you want to see it done wrong, then watch Charlie's Angels. Remember when they did that?
I try not to remember.
Is that why you drink?
I used to think Cameron Diaz was super hot, and then things took a turn. Things took a real turn.
She was not hot after the mask, let's just be honest.
She was in There's Something About Mary.
I know. I'm counting it.
How dare you? She dated Brett Favre. Okay, so that second set piece, we have a floor so sensitive that a drop of...
Some scene. I loved the scene.
Well, it's an absurd scene, but it's an awesome...
That's part of the thing, though. That makes it absurd, because condensation just sort of happens, right? Yeah. I mean, they can't really keep that clean, can they?
But how great is that, that when he, all of a sudden, his hand shoots down, and he just sees the...
Catches the drop.
And Bing Rames is like, phew, as though he wasn't the first guy to get away. The only guy to get away.
You wonder where all the maids go, the top maids go. There's just a team cleaning that room constantly. And a vent for the computers.
Well, it's an open system, too. Like, there's a vent into the room, and you're telling me that nothing is going to change, and it's a static state.
Well, they did
room.
Have to turn off the security system in the vents, though.
But it's still an open... I liked the scene.
Yeah, there's some weird bits. It is so good, though. Yeah.
The more you think about it, though, the more it just sort of, like Matt was doing.
Well, there's no need to pick it apart, though. I thought it was really nicely executed. And, the knife falling on the table at the end and, like...
And Jean Reno actually, being buff. He was good. You didn't like him?
What? I like Jean Reno.
When I said Jean Reno, you, like...
Oh, no. Like,
that's just
I just was having flashbacks to Godzilla again, where he was trying to get that coffee.
You said this was French roast.
Well, and I mean, it's really hard in a scene, like Jeremy brought up at the beginning, where it's virtually silent, nothing exciting, well, nothing inherently dangerous is happening to make it dramatic. And, we're literally worrying about whether or not the guy's going to have another bout of vomit. You know, they keep cutting. He's heading, he's entering the... And he's up
outer
above.
Outer door.
Outer door. Toast. Toast. And you're just like...
Oh, man. What was the deal with toast?
Okay, so there's a decibel meter, and he was counting one, two, three, and he was getting louder. The one was in the green, two was in the yellow, three was in the red, and then toast was loud enough to set off the signal. And so he was saying toast to say, any louder, and you're going to cut the...
Wouldn't the knife falling produce a loud enough sound?
The alarm was off.
The alarm
had been turned off by that point.
That's where... whether you like De Palma or not, that's a well-directed scene.
It is.
And I get the feeling he doesn't want to take credit for it, because the credit sequence at the end, first of all, it's the worst title card I've ever seen in a movie. I made a note of that. And I was like, it just says mission, and then it's stamped impossible, and you're just like, wow. But the sequence at the end, the credit sequence, the first person listed is the second unit director. And you're just like, oh, De Palma was off stage drinking or something.
Well, wasn't he? He was a cokehead during the 80s, I'm sure.
So this
Who
point
wasn't?
He's getting
Come
his method
on,
out.
Boy.
Yeah. This isn't.
It's a work email. We're good.
Okay.
Your mission, if you choose to accept it, you have to recompile.
I have to do some database things. You know.
I'd answer the phone in 15 seconds, or else that thing's going to explode.
It's gone. Yeah.
Oh, it's okay.
All of a sudden, Matt likes up a cigarette for literally no reason.
Let's see. What was the deal with the masks in this one? Because they've gotten better over time, but here they looked really unrealistic.
I don't know. The only one that I really noticed was the last one, which I kind of liked, where they're in the I guess the
cargo hold.
The baggage. Yeah, the baggage tray. Yeah.
You need to know what's going on. I mean.
Yeah, and all of a sudden, John Voight looks extra John Voight for a second, and then he turns into Tom Cruise.
Yes. How can one look extra John Voight?
When your cheeks look taut, but none of the rest of your face does.
Okay.
Because, like, he has strong cheekbones, so strong, it manages to pull tight his face. But everything else looks extra wrinkly. I told everyone before the podcast I wrote this down, but it might as well be on print, so I have an official enemy. But I was like, remember, no matter how bad you look first thing in the morning, John Voight still produced Angelina Jolie. So beautiful. It's like one of those ugly duckling turning into a swan kind of thing.
That wasn't John Voight, though. That was a specific piece of John Voight's anatomy that produced
sure
the beautiful swan.
And that's probably wrinkly, too.
I don't want to think about that too long.
I think, and that's...
All right, we have...
Please let us not end on that note.
No, we just have to do an Angelina Jolie movie, like Hackers or something, and then we'll put her back in her place, too.
Tomb Raider, that one would be fun.
Oh, God, no.
Which one?
Huh?
Which one?
There was more than one? Holy shit!
The Cradle of Life?
Oh, God!
I'd rather watch a pixelated pervert play the second one on my computer.
Is the pervert pixelated or is the game pixelated?
Maybe he's just pixelated. He's a pervert for pixelation.
Okay, there we go. That makes more sense.
He has all of the Leisure Suit Larry games.
He does. He's an expert in them.
He knows where those... all of them. All of them.
It's like drinking off somehow John Voight produced the Leisure Suit Larry games. That's how this... that's how that worked, I guess.
It might as well be. He showed up and no one was suspicious. Well, let's back up. Tom Cruise was not suspicious. Maybe the Thetans were telling him it was okay, but that was a really weird scene. If all of a sudden a guy I respected who I saw dead showed up, and then he... This is the problem with the third act for me.
Are you saying the payphone scene?
Yeah, the payphone scene.
Okay, he shows up. Tom Cruise realizes he set up the whole thing.
Which I still don't understand how.
But
he's a good spy. He make smart brain.
Even so, I mean, it's a pretty big jump for, my trusted friend and mentor for 10 years. Holy shit, in 30 seconds, I've just decided not to trust you based on speculation.
It's the only thing that makes sense, because his dead mentor shows up.
The thing, I'm going to agree with Abby on this and agree with you at the same time. I was confused in that scene because he was talking about how the CIA was the bad guy and not him, even though John Voight was the one. And so when I was like, when I saw this movie a dozen times, I own the VHS tape, and I'm very proud of myself. I got it from Columbia Movie Club.
You should get that framed.
I should.
You should get a VHS tape framed.
But,
nice shadow box. That'd be good.
Pictures of Tom Cruise's career. but I was realizing, until I saw it today, I didn't realize how he, what he was figuring out. At that point, I thought, isn't John Voight the bad guy? And I didn't get till the end. Then the surprise ending was not a surprise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I didn't understand that he was saying something different, which is really hard to get across in that scene, but they don't do a good job at all of getting it
across. Maybe that would have been better if they kept John Voight hidden until, they were doing the money drop and then do that flashback as to how he manipulated that scene and killed everybody.
Yeah, because, I mean, if John Voight had stayed dead, then the focus would still be on Kittredge as the guy who would set everything up.
Exactly.
You said you disagree.
I got this when I was like 8. I've seen, again.
Well, maybe not everyone was smart as you when you were 8.
Okay, good. I'll accept that.
You were a baby genius. So.
Oh, let's not talk about that. Speaking of John Voight.
You're right. John Voight's in that too. Yes. As a spy master. Wait.
Oh, boy.
There's a trend.
I love this idea that Brian De Palma's like, we set up a sequel, need to do a sequel. And John Voight said, but it should be starring babies. Get the fuck out. Get the fuck right out.
And
John Boyd just went and did it anyway.
I'll do my own movie with blackjack and hookers and
and Nicolas Cage in a boxing match. That was him, right? Snake Eyes?
It sure was. Nicolas Cage knows to never stop doing anything.
No. And God bless him for it.
We need to splice him into, like, after he passes away, we need to splice him into, like, vacuum commercials like they did in Killing.
Oh, with press.
However, we're just about out of time here. We've been talking for over half an hour, and we should do some final reviews, but I want to do talk right before we get to that about the last scene on the train. It's the only thing to me that feels extra absurd. We're talking about a scene where Tom Cruise is, like, waving around a pressure-sensitive floor. The idea that you could strap a helicopter to the back of a TGV going 250 miles an hour, whatever, and it makes it through the channel okay is ridiculous.
Yes.
Like,
I remember back in the day when that scene was like advertisement for some new sound system. They would replay that scene so you could really hear the explosion. Anybody else remember that?
I do. And it was like when they first started certifying THX home systems.
That was it, yeah.
Here's the thing. The first half of the scene is brilliant. Right? Where everyone's on the train and Ving Rhames is trying to block the signal and the guy's like, hey, you forgot your phone. Which never comes back. And that's not a problem that's resolved. You know, he should have been like, oh, you're right. And then he goes to the bathroom and then tries to go back and like hide it in the back of a seat or something. That doesn't get solved. Max is just there like, it's the most dramatic uploading of a file scene possibly ever.
And then it fails because, what, they lost the signal.
Which, in the channel.
Which perfectly is still today very relevant.
And explains why he didn't need to get the phone back.
It does, luckily. He's like...
Yeah, and another thing about this movie, had this been today, that upload would have taken 2 seconds.
Yeah. But they would have still dragged it on for like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Maybe they had really terrible data plans.
Today, if it was today, it would be like decrypting and then it would fail. Oh, so.
It would.
If it was today, Comcast would somehow get a product placement during that scene.
My favorite thing, again, something that came out, I think, 2 years later, was South Park the Movie, which parodies this. And he's just typing, typing, typing. And it says, password encrypted, typing, typing. Past.
Because
that's what it was. Like, Emilio Estevez is looking at us at the beginning, looking at the elevator security system or whatever, and it's just a CAD drawing, and then it turns red and it says access denied. I'm just like, oh no, it's denied. And just scrolling text.
Cut the power.
He gets stabbed through the eyes. I don't know what elevator system has spikes just in case, but I love that idea.
All of them.
I can tell you this messed me up for years.
Now, not to, like, really derail, but, like, do you think they really had planned that far ahead where, like, you know, they're going to use the elevator to access this room and let's put spikes on it just in case? Or
it's a super top secret room. Duh.
Hey, Mitch, you know that people could break in through the ceiling through these elevators? I have a security system upgrade for you. It'll only cost $10 million, but it will stab people through the eyes.
So the
I also like the idea that the elevator goes down and he's still stuck up there, like with his head on the spikes.
I like the idea in your scenario. The security systems guy is a guy doing a bad Christopher Walken impersonation.
A guy from Jersey. He's
wow. We're going to get spikes on the top of this elevator.
So I'm trying to do the guy with the mustache from The Simpsons who sells crap. He's like, you know, for another $50 million. We could sell you robots with lasers. You know, we're only going to hold one ball here a year or so, so maybe next time. He goes, you know, there's a guy here with a knock list in his pocket. I heard about it on Wikipedia. Goddamn. They're on the TGV. Crap is literally going down.
Yes.
Literally. Everyone's on the train because it's a crowded scene, satire scene. And, like, everyone just walking the aisles, trying to hide their face behind hair and stuff.
Which doesn't work in real life. The spies are all in trench coats, like you do.
Yep. Yeah. Because this is an Agatha Christie story.
Yeah. Also, I realize that both Matt and Abby have similar length hair.
Yes.
hers is more beautiful. His is more elegant.
Sumptuous is actually the adjective.
Not succulent.
So you're saying, Nick, you're saying that the train scene worked up until they introduced a helicopter into the equation?
They had to escalate. What are you going to do at that point?
Because apparently throw a stick of gum at the helicopter and then hope to God.
So much better if it was at, like, Temple of Doom, the carts.
Yes.
Going after them. That would have been brilliant.
Everything is better with Temple of Doom carts.
Yes.
So my wife left the room and then came back. Like, no. She was watching it with me. She just went to go get something from upstairs. Came back down. And then Tom Cruise is climbing on top of the train. And she goes, hey, isn't that a TGV? And then he immediately flips over and slams down on top of the train car. And you realized, oh, did they just strap him on top of a train and not tell him? This is awesome. This is the best on top of a train scene ever. For those of you who watch Archer, they make this joke a lot, where Archer wants to be on top of the train and have a fight scene on top of a train because it's very Bond.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he goes, are you just getting bugs in your mouth? Isn't it hard to stand up? Because this is what it is. It's impossible. Mission is impossible. Possible to stand up. this is the, I guess, final set piece of the film.
I have another question about that. Even if the helicopter exploded that close to him, wouldn't the debris still, like, burn him to death? Or the impact break every bone in his body?
I always thought, the explosion would propel him straight up into the rotor, and he would...
You complain about John Woo, but this film still had those same problems, right?
There were less of them.
Oh, yeah.
and to be fair, they did make fun of how bad that ending was when, like, the helicopter crashes, rolls, and then ends up with the blade half an inch from his neck. Which is something John Woo wouldn't do.
No.
But De Palma's making fun of, I mean... As much as De Palma can make a joke, this is a De Palma joke where he's like, this is what would really it wouldn't happen, but of course, it's just funny. Also, why would the train stop when the explosion's happening? Why would any of this ever happen? Why is Tom Cruise not bleeding at all? He didn't even sweat through his shirt.
No.
I sweat just sitting here drinking. I mean, talking. In any of these scenarios, I would have been the guy who set off everything at every turn where, you know, he's trying to desperately, like, stay above the ground. I would have just relaxed and my gut would have hit the ground. You know, it's one of those things.
The best thing about that, I read on IMDb that whenever they did that, he kept hitting his head.
Oh.
So he had to put coins in his shoes to balance out the weight. So if anyone out there in interweb land has some outtakes on that, please, for the love of God, put them on YouTube. Just like a 10-hour loop of Tom Cruise hitting his head on the ground.
I don't think you need Mission Impossible footage for that.
Yeah.
Steel Magnolias. No, he wasn't in Steel Magnolias.
Regular Magnolia.
Yeah. He wasn't the guy in Boogie Nights, which would have been a different movie. But we are just about out of time. We should give our final thoughts here. Starting with our defender. Jeremy, what do you think?
I thought this held up quite well. It's a perfect combination of spy thriller and actioner. The technology is dated, but, you know, as a piece of entertainment, it's damn good.
Excellent. So we're going to go with Daniel.
Well, once again, appreciate the conversation. I realize now that there were things I thought didn't work that actually kind of do. So maybe I should watch the movie again, which I guess means something. But even so, and I know Jeremy's going to start throwing glasses at me, I like the sequels better, including the second one.
Blasphemy.
Whatever. So I'd still recommend checking it out, but only just maybe once or twice.
Abby.
So I feel like this is a reverse of the Bond podcast. Like, everything that I think makes this movie work, everybody is ripping to shreds, and everything that it's the same things that make the Bond movies work. It's a ridiculous spy movie. It's enjoyable. There are so many famous things about this movie that if you haven't seen it, you have to go watch so you can get pop culture references. I think it's better than all of the sequels. There are strong female characters. The technology dates it, okay, but it's a good movie. It's enjoyable. It's not like you don't have to think deep about it. You're like, wow,
good spy movie that only, again, has one gunshot, which I didn't even notice, and now makes me appreciate it more.
Yeah. Matt?
So I liked it. I hadn't seen it in a long time. And there, again, we've said it a few times, like the tech things were really silly. They're things that should have... You know, you shouldn't have been able to suspend your disbelief for, but it was moving quick enough that I didn't think of it at the time. So, I mean, that's good. I liked it.
Excellent. You know, and my final thoughts here, the new one's coming out very soon. This will be released right before it comes out. That's why. Hi, go see it. My thoughts are the more recent ones are more action-y. This one's more of a spy movie. And, you know, that's just a classification difference, but... It's like, you know, to everyone's point, you know, there's not a lot of guns fired. The technology doesn't hold up, but they make an effort to make very little of it futuristic technology.
Yeah.
You know, it's spy tech, but it's not like, this is how we see everything in 3D.
And it wasn't like a big part of it. You could have worked without it.
Exactly. And like cell phone jammers exist. Security systems exist. Now the pressure thing, that's whatever, but it makes a good set piece. It's the only movie I've ever seen that make plot holes seem like twists. But other than that, I mean...
Isn't that M. Night Shyamalan's career?
Other than Live and Let Die.
And the movies of Roger Moore. the entire filmography. No, I mean, but at the end of the day, I enjoy this movie more than when I was a kid because when I was a kid, I just liked the action-y bits. This actually seemed like it had a story to tell. It was just a weird kind of disjointed story, which is fine, which is totally fine. I'm just, you know, I'm much more impressed with it than I thought I'd be, considering I haven't probably seen it in 10 years. And next year it'll be 20 years old.
Oh, yeah.
But that being said, we're out of time. So tune in next week when we put a little bit more of your past on trial. Thanks very much, and tune in next week.
Biopi Defend Your Childhood is a member of the ESO Network and produced by Dude Letter Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman. It is edited by Nick Hoffman and Candace Burns. The theme song is Caroline by the Serenaders, and their music is available on Amazon. Please rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast. And tune in next week when we put another little piece of your past on trial. Thanks!
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.